Welcome to Time Travelling Team, the weekly podcast where we review every episode of Doctor Who right from the very beginning. I'm Trisha.
And I'm Pelly. This week we join the Doctor and Nyssa as they recall to Gallifrey to fight an old foe and in the process reconnect with a friend in Ark of Infinity. As usual, we'll be discussing the Doctor, companions and the villains and give your thoughts on the story as a whole.
We would also love to hear your thoughts on this story, so as always, to join the discussion, you can check us out at Time Teamp, that's TimeTeamp, on Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, and Instagram, or you can email us at timetravellingteamp@teampproductions.com. Now, Paddy, if you would be so generous as to take us through our story recap.
Well, part one. In a secret, shadow-filled control room on the Citadel Gallifrey, a Time Lord activates a holographic projection of an armor-clad figure whose appearance is inverted to negative. The figure asks the Time Lord if they are ready to put their plan into action and if they have chosen a suitable candidate. The Time Lord says that they have and they have chosen the Doctor. Elsewhere, a pair of Citadel technicians notice an outgoing transmission sending the extracted biodata of the Doctor. One of them, Taylor, tells the other, Damon, to cut the transmission whilst he goes to report it to the Council. The cut transmission is noticed by the mysterious figure, and he asks what will happen. The Time Lord says that he will deal with it, and then asks if they should delay their plans. The figure says that they must proceed, as they have already managed to take control of the Doctor's TARDIS. Meanwhile, on the TARDIS, the Doctor and Nyssa carry out repairs on the various circuits that have been damaged over the course of their last few adventures. Nyssa then notices an alarm on the console and brings it to the Doctor's attention. The Doctor says that they are being brought to a convergence of magnetic radiation and says they need to change course immediately. Nyssa says that none of the readings make sense and the Doctor agrees. Back on the Citadel, Taylor returns and says that the Castellan will not take any action on the transmission until the following day, even after he pointed out it was the Doctor's biodata that was being transmitted. Damon points out that only high-ranking council members have access to that information. Taylor agrees and then dismisses Damon, saying that he will go again to the Castellan in the morning. However, after he leaves, the mysterious Time Lord enters the room and kills Taylor. They then return to the hidden control room, and the armor-clad figure says that he will proceed with his plan to bind himself to the Doctor, thereby allowing himself to remain in this plane of existence. Back on the TARDIS, the Doctor says that he cannot control the ship, and this points to the external view screen, where a glowing ball of energy is shown to be rapidly approaching them. The Doctor says that it is an extra-dimensional in nature, and tells her to run. They flee through the corridors of the TARDIS, pursued by the energy that easily enters the time machine. It eventually stops them in their tracks before taking on the shape of the armor-clad figure. It then enters the Doctor, causing him to cry out in pain before falling to the floor. Meanwhile, in an underground crypt in Amsterdam, the sound of a materializing TARDIS wakes up a sleeping backpacker. The backpacker, Colin, tries to wake up his friend, Robin, who instead tells him to go back to sleep. Colin goes to investigate the sound, and he sees a stone monument that wasn't there when they first arrived. The monument suddenly opens, filling the room with blinding light, and a strange skeletal bird-like creature emerges, blasting Colin with a blast from an antimatter gun. Robin then goes to investigate the commotion and avoids a blast from the bird creature's gun. He then flees the crypt. He goes back briefly to retrieve his belongings, and he encounters Colin, who appears to be in a zombified state, causing Robin to flee in terror. Back in the TARDIS, the Doctor finally wakes up and Nyssa asks what happened. The Doctor says that a being from another dimension attempted to complete a temporal bonding with him. Nyssa says that the scan has registered the energy form as being made of antimatter, but that it clearly failed in its mission. However, the Doctor says that it is still around somewhere and you need to find it immediately, lest it wreak havoc due to its antimatter nature. Meanwhile, on Gallifrey, the High Council of Time Lords meets to discuss the presence of the antimatter entity in their universe. Councillor Hedden asks if they know where the entity is, but President Barusa says that the Matrix cannot detect it due to it being shielded by a temporal distortion caused by its antimatter origins. Councillor Talia says that the shielding will decay the longer it exists in their universe, and they will soon discover it, but the Castellan says that by then it may be too late. Barusa then orders Commander Maxwell, the head of the Citadel Security, to recall the Doctor's TARDIS. Maxwell goes to the control room and instructs Damon to carry out the command, who reluctantly does so. Back in Amsterdam, Robin checks into the hostel that he and Colin had booked but could not stay in due to their being overbooked the previous night. The receptionist asks after Colin, and a frustrated Robin, who had spent the night giving a report to the police, says that he doesn't know where he is. The receptionist then says that there was a message for Colin from his cousin, who will be arriving to join him tomorrow. On the TARDIS, the Doctor and Nyssa are trying to locate the entity's origins, and it is discovered that it came through an ancient dimensional doorway known as the Ark of Infinity. Nyssa then asks about the bonding process, and the Doctor says that it needed his biodata to achieve a full bonding, and the only place that could be obtained is from the Matrix on Gallifrey. However, an alarm suddenly appears on the console, and the Doctor says that it is an override, recalling his TARDIS to Gallifrey, which he says can only be done through a presidential order. The TARDIS lands in a security compound in the Citadel. They exit the TARDIS and find that they have been locked in. The Doctor starts to work on picking the lock, and Nyssa wonders why they are being held prisoner. The Doctor says that the entity poses a danger to the universe, and that the simplest solution to keep everyone safe would be to kill the Doctor. Unbeknownst to them, their conversation is observed by Damon, who is sympathetic to the Doctor, and he unlocks the door. The Doctor and Nyssa then try to find their way to the computer archive. However, they run into the Citadel guards who open fire on them, forcing them to flee. They then encounter Maxwell, who shoots the Doctor with a taser when he introduces himself. Nyssa is then dragged away by the guards as she calls out for the Doctor. Part 2. The Doctor starts to regain consciousness, and Maxwell orders him to be taken away again with Nyssa. Nyssa demands that he receive medical attention as they are brought back to the TARDIS, but Maxwell says that he will be fine before removing the space-time element from the console. He tells Nyssa to inform the Doctor that his men have been ordered to shoot to kill if he tries to get through the security compound again. The situation is reported to the Castellan, who informs the other members of the Council whilst on his way to see Barusa. Hedin and Cardinal Zarak argue over the situation, with Hedin saying that they should have welcomed the Doctor rather than immediately treating him like a criminal. Later, the Doctor recovers and tells Nyssa that they need to discover where the entity has gone. However, before they can begin their investigations, Maxwell and his men return to take them to see the High Council. At the Council chamber, the Doctor is warmly greeted by Hedin before introducing everyone to Nyssa. The Doctor then asks if his biodata was removed from the Matrix, knowing that the entity could not have bonded to him without it. However, before anyone can respond to the accusations, Barusa arrives and calls the Council to session. Barusa says that the entity poses too great a threat to the Matrix and needs to be eliminated as soon as possible. The Doctor says that the entity must have been trying to bond with him for a purpose and says that a member of the Council must be helping it, as that is the only way to get the biodata. However, Barusa says that they cannot waste time on investigations and says that in order to save the Citadel, the Doctor must be killed. Nyssa objects to this, but Barusa says that they have no other choice. Maxwell takes the Doctor back to the security compound. Nyssa continues to appeal to the Council, saying that they need to find the traitor, but Talia echoes Barusa's earlier statement, saying that the choice before them is either to sacrifice the Doctor or sacrifice millions of lives. Meanwhile, back in Amsterdam, Robin goes to the airport to collect Colin's cousin, who turns out to be Tegan. Tegan asks after Colin, and Robin says that they should go into town and he will tell her everything there. They arrive at a coffee shop, and Robin tells her about the events in the crypt. Tegan asks if he went to the police, but Robin says that they aren't interested due to the fact that they are both foreign nationals. Robin compounds matters by saying that he can't get further involved as he has lost his passport. However, Tegan says that she will take care of everything. They go to the police station, but Tegan gets the same treatment as Robin did. She tells him that they have no choice but to search for him themselves. Back on Gallifrey, the Doctor is escorted back to his TARDIS, but en route he encounters Damon and they shake hands, remembering each other from their youth. Maxwell orders Damon to be moved aside, and the Doctor is finally brought to the TARDIS, where he is watched by two guards. He complains to Maxwell, saying that he wants to be allowed to mentally prepare himself for his execution. Maxwell reluctantly calls his men off, but warns the Doctor not to try escaping into the TARDIS corridors, otherwise he will be killed immediately. A short while later, Damon encounters Nyssa as she storms away from the Council chambers and takes her aside, introducing himself as a friend of the Doctor's. He tells her that he slipped a printout of the Doctor's biodata to him when they shook hands. Nyssa says that they need to find a way to speak to the Doctor so they can figure out how to find the traitor. Together they go to Hedin, who agrees to help them and goes to the Castellan to request an audience for them with the Doctor. The Castellan agrees, much too easily for Damon's liking, but he goes with Nyssa to the TARDIS, accompanied by Maxwell. The Doctor is delighted to see them, and begins to bring them to his room, but Maxwell says that they are to remain in the console room, where their conversation can be monitored by a recording device he surreptitiously attached to the console. However, Damon says that the Castellan gave them permission to speak in private, and the Doctor leads them away, asking how Leela is doing. In Nyssa's room, the Doctor reveals that he saw Maxwell plant a recording device, and then shows them the printout Damon gave him earlier. He says that it is definitive proof that there is a traitor in the Council. He then asks Damon to help them, and Damon agrees. The doctor asks him for another time-space element, preferably without a recall switch on it, and to check the Matrix records for any signs of unusual movement of equipment. Maxwell then enters, and the doctor makes a show of telling Nissa and Damon that he has accepted his fate. Elsewhere, the traitorous Time Lord informs the Entity that the doctor's execution has been approved and will take place shortly. The Entity says that they will be ready to make their move, and then reveals its location to be in the TARDIS in the crypt in Amsterdam. The Entity instructs the zombified Colin to carry out his orders. The Citadel bell then begins to toll for the Doctor's execution, and Damon, who has been working on rigging up the new time-space element, says that they have run out of time. Nissa orders him to open a nearby weapons cabinet, saying that she will buy him the time that he needs to finish the element. Damon objects, saying that she will be killed, but Nissa says that they have no other choice. She makes her way to the execution chamber, knocking out the guards at the door with her staser, and she tells the Doctor to come with her. However, the Doctor tells her to stand down, saying that he doesn't want anyone to die for him. Bruce orders her to drop her weapon, but she refuses, telling them that they have the proof of the traitor, but the Doctor pleads with her and says that he knows what he is doing. She reluctantly gives him the staser, and the Doctor begs the Council to spare her and let her go free, which Bruce agrees to. The Doctor makes his way to the execution pod. However, just as the execution takes place, the Entity appears and merges with the Doctor before his body completely disappears, with Maxwell saying that the execution has been successfully completed. Part 3. Bruce confirms that all traces of the Entity have vanished from the Matrix, and Nissa says... Nissa runs from the scene in tears. The others also depart, with the Castellan taking Maxwell aside and ordering him to discreetly do a follow-up analysis of the execution. Elsewhere, the traitorous Time Lord communes with the armor-clad figure, who informs him that the Doctor is alive but in a weakened state. The figure then communes with the Doctor, telling him that his mind has been placed in the Matrix, but his body is still in the execution chamber, but shielded by an invisible barrier. The Doctor asks who he is, and the figure replies that he is a friend, but warns that he holds the Doctor's fate in his hands. He says that he wants to help Gallifrey, but he knows that they would not accept him. The Doctor realizes that the figure is known to the Council and says that he cannot allow him to gain control of the Matrix. Meanwhile, Maxwell summons the Castellan to the computer room and shows him the results of his investigation. He says that at the moment of the execution, the circuitry failed due to being tampered with. He also reveals that Nissa was telling the truth about the traitor. The Castellan tells him to bring Nissa and Damon to him, but not to alert the rest of the Council. A short while later, Maxwell returns with them, and the Castellan accuses Damon of being the traitor. Damon says that he didn't want to come forward as he didn't know who on the Council he could trust. The Castellan reveals that the Doctor is still alive, but Nissa and Damon deny any knowledge of it. The Castellan tells him to wait there whilst he and Maxwell continue to investigate. After they leave, Nissa and Damon rejoice at the news about the Doctor. The Castellan returns a short while later, telling them that the search is underway. He orders Damon to print out the transmission information and then orders Maxwell to bring Hedden, Zorik and Thalia to his office. Nissa asks if he knows who the traitor is, and the Castellan reveals that he does, but shocks them by saying that the Doctor is still the main instigator of the conspiracy. He then leaves, locking them in the computer room. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Tegan and Robin go to the crypt in their search for Colin. Robin shows her the spot where they were staying, and they hear the sound of the strange machinery activating. They go take a look at an energy coil wrapped around a group of water pipes, but before they can investigate it further, they are forced into hiding as they hear someone approaching. They see that it is Colin, and despite Robin's objections, Tegan chases after him into the other room, where she is shot by the bird-like creature before fading from sight. The same thing happens to Robin when he tries to rescue her. Tegan and Robin then materialize in the armor-clad figure's TARDIS, where Tegan demands to know where Colin is. The armored figure arrives and says that if they cooperate with him, then he will be lenient to them. He then has the bird-like creature, which he calls an Ergon, scan them, and it detects her association with the Doctor. The figure rejoices in this news before being summoned by the traitor, who informs him of the investigation. The traitor says that the sooner or later they will be discovered, and that they need to accelerate their plan. He suggests letting the Doctor go so that the armored figure can focus all of his energy on completing the bonding with the Doctor. The armored figure says that it is too risky as the Doctor could cause trouble, but the traitor says that they have no other choice. The armored figure reluctantly agrees and again communes with the Doctor, telling him that he will be released on the condition that he not interfere with his plans. The doctor says that he will do everything he can to stop him, but the armored figure then produces Tegan, saying that she will die if he doesn't agree. The doctor says that she is just an illusion, but the armored figure begins to torture her in an effort to blackmail him. After a while, the doctor agrees to the figure's demands, and he is then kicked out of the Matrix and returned to his body. Tegan is also released, and as a show of gratitude, an exhausted Colin is also released from his trance, and Tegan rushes to him as he collapses. Back on Gallifrey, the summoned council members gather at the Castellan's office, where he tells them that the doctor is alive and that one of the high council members is a traitor. Much to their shock, he says that it is Barusa who was helping the doctor. He says that they were trying to gain ultimate power by using the entity to link the Arc of Infinity to the Matrix. Meanwhile, the doctor releases Nyssa and Damon from the computer room and asks if the search for the strange equipment turned up anything. Damon says that an experimental fusion booster was shipped recently and says that it is capable of generating vast amounts of power from hydrogen atoms over short periods of time. The doctor tells him to send him the precise location it was sent to before telling Nyssa that they need to go to Earth to rescue Tegan. Elsewhere, the traitor reveals to the armored figure that the council are hunting down the doctor and time is short. The figure tells him to stall for time by getting Barusa to isolate the master control function from the Matrix. He says that should give him enough time to completely transfer to the doctor's body. The traitor leaves his office, revealing himself to be Hedden. Back in the computer room, Damon says that the coordinates for delivery were scrambled due to temporal distortion, but he managed to confirm that it was sent to Earth, using Barusa's presidential code. The doctor thanks Damon for all his help and says that he needs to find Barusa. He then leaves with Nyssa, who has taken another staser despite his objections. As they make their way to Barusa's office, they are fired at by guards and are forced to flee down the corridors. Nyssa manages to stun a few guards that they encounter before they hide as Maxwell arrives with reinforcements. Castellan tells him to keep searching as he needs the doctor captive so he can confront Barusa. The doctor and Nyssa soon arrive at Barusa's office, where they find Hedden aiming a staser at Barusa as he attempts to force him to isolate the Matrix. The doctor is shocked at Hedden's betrayal as he forces him to stand by Barusa and asks why he has turned to evil after all this time. Hedden reveals that the armor-clad figure is actually Omega, one of the three founders of Time Lord Society, and that he's attempting to bring him back to their universe. The doctor tells him that Omega is insane, remembering his encounter with him in the antimatter universe when he was with his... The doctor tells him that Omega is insane, remembering his encounter with him in the antimatter universe when he was in his third incarnation. Suddenly, Castellan arrives with a squad of guards and congratulates Hedden on capturing the doctor and Barusa. He then says that he will carry out the doctor's execution and goes to shoot him, but Hedden dives in front of the blast. The doctor goes to Hedden, lambasting the Castellan for his rashness. Barusa reveals Hedden's treachery, and the doctor tells him to shut down the Matrix to try and stop Omega. However, Nyssa reveals it is already too late, as Omega appears on the Matrix mainframe screen. Part 4. The doctor tells Omega that his plan will fail, especially when Barusa points out that Hedden is dead. Omega angrily storms off, and the doctor says that he will need to go back into the Matrix to try and find Tegan, which he says will hopefully reveal Omega's location. Nyssa says that Omega could kill her to prevent the doctor's interference, but he orders Nyssa to wait in the TARDIS. The doctor enters the Matrix and congratulates Omega on his victory before asking to see Tegan. Tegan appears in the Matrix and immediately begins to call out her location to the doctor, but Omega makes her disappear screaming. The doctor demands to know if she is okay, and Omega says that she will be so long as the doctor does not attempt to interfere with his plans. The doctor then exits the Matrix and goes to the TARDIS, where he tells a frosty Nyssa that Tegan is unharmed. Barusa then calls to say that they will create a distraction so that the Omega doesn't detect the TARDIS from taking off. The duo then get to work with Nyssa building an antimatter detector whilst the Doctor builds a circuit breaker to deal with the fusion booster. They soon land in Amsterdam and begin to search for Tegan based on the limited information she was able to give them. The Doctor says that she called out some initials that he thinks might be a start of an address. He takes a look at a phone boot, he takes a look at a phone book and finds a listing for the hostel chain that Tegan's cousin was booked into, but he realizes that he doesn't have any money for the phone boot. With no other choice, they continue to search on foot. They eventually find the hostel where Colin and Robin were booked into, and after explaining their predicament, the staff give him a letter that Robin had left for Tegan in the event that he missed her at the airport. The letter contains the address of the crypt, and the staff tell them where to find it. They eventually discover the crypt and make their way inside. Once there, the Doctor notices several water pipes, and he says that the water running through them would provide ample power once converted by the fusion booster. They soon spot the fusion booster nearby, and the Doctor attaches his circuit breaker to it. Just as he finishes, they are ambushed by the Aragon. It fires at the Doctor but misses, allowing him to charge it and disarm it. The Doctor tells Nyssa to shoot it, which she does so after getting a clear shot. The Doctor takes the gun from her, and they rush to the Omega's TARDIS. Once they are in the TARDIS, they find Omega writhing in pain in a chair as energy from the fusion booster courses through him. He orders the Doctor to drop his weapon or he will kill Tegan, who he shows them is surrounded by an antimatter field. The Doctor says that his plan has failed as the circuit breaker causes an energy feedback loop that causes an explosion. Much to the Doctor's surprise, Omega is still there. The Doctor then says that the transfer bond isn't complete, but Omega reveals his armor to reveal that he has a tangible body that is an exact double of the Doctor. The Doctor says that his body will fail and revert to antimatter, but Omega gloatingly says that he is wrong and that he will return to Gallifrey once he builds a new TARDIS, as his one was damaged in the feedback explosion. He then leaves, and the Doctor tells Nyssa and the newly released Tegan to help him salvage the matter converters from Omega's chair. The Doctor finds what he wants and disassembles Aragon's gun as they rush outside to find Omega, only to see a dead Gardner that he has stripped of his clothes. The Doctor says that they need to find Omega before he reverts to antimatter and causes the cataclysmic explosion. They search the surrounding area and are drawn to the sounds of screams. Tegan then spots Omega running away and they chase after him, noticing that his body has begun to decay due to the rapidly decaying electromagnetic field shielding his body. After a chase through the canals, they finally corner him at a pier. Omega says that he could have brought glory to Gallifrey if it wasn't for their hatred of him. The Doctor says that they didn't hate him and that he should have been content to remain in the antimatter universe. Omega says that he just wanted to return home, but he will now kill everyone when his body explodes. The Doctor hastily assembles a weapon from the salvaged components he took from Omega's TARDIS and says that he can either kill Omega with it or return him back to the antimatter universe. Omega says that if he can't live, then nobody can, and willingly allows his body to decay. With no other choice, the Doctor shoots him and they watch as his body vanishes. Later, Tegan returns from the hospital and tells him that Colin will be okay and that he will be going back home soon. Nyssa says that she misses her and asks when she will return to work. Tegan reveals that she was fired from her job and that she is free to travel with them again. Nyssa embraces her as the Doctor struggles to keep a smile on his face. End of the story. So, that is the story recap, and we now have a three-person TARDIS again. So, let us find out what the trivia is surrounding this miraculous return.
Cool. So, the air date for Arc of Infinity is the 3rd to the 12th of January 1983. The writer of the story is Johnny Byrne. This is the second of three writing credits for Johnny. We previously discussed his work in The Keeper of Traken, and we'll see his work one final time in Warriors of the Deep. The director of the story is Ron Jones. This is directing credit 3 of 6 for Ron. We previously saw his work in Black Orchid and last week in Time Flight. We will see it again in Frontios, Vengeance on Varos, and Mind Warp. The working titles for the story were The Time of Neiman, which I don't get, and The Time of Omega, which I'm assuming they didn't pick because they wanted it to be a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
The original storyline for this involved the Doctor having nightmares about his regeneration, which were actually a precursor to the arrival of an entity called the Avatar, who takes on the Doctor's form and goes to Amsterdam. Operating there as Neiman, the Avatar takes control of human minds, striving to create a form in which it will be able to permanently maintain its existence. Meanwhile, the Doctor and Nyssa discover the plot when they land in a future version of Amsterdam, which is populated by robot guards called Sweepers. The elderly resistors and the barbaric anarchs. This is a completely different plot. Realizing the history has been altered, they go back in time to present-day Amsterdam, at which point the Doctor discovers that Time Lord regeneration is the mechanism that the Avatar is using to manifest themselves. And the Avatar is then defeated when the Doctor relives his own recent regeneration. I think there's a lot in there that could have been
That
really
sounds awesome.
interesting. I do wonder if one of the reasons why they rewrote it is because Tom wouldn't come back to do anything with the regeneration part. Unless they were just planning on having to be the Doctor just has a flashback to the regeneration. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they could just do a flashback.
Yeah. Filming was allowed in Amsterdam as long as the story didn't involve four things: drug smuggling, prostitution, diamond theft, or art theft. And from a city perspective and public persona, I could understand why. On the flip side of that, though, while they were visiting the Red District in Amsterdam, Janet Fielding was approached by a man who had mistaken her for one of the city's prostitutes. Fair enough. Some
Okay.
could argue that's a compliment, some could argue it is not.
Yes.
Crowd control in Amsterdam was actually a big problem throughout the shoot, possibly more than they thought it would be, because a lot of Dutch viewers recognized Peter Davison from All Creatures Great and Small. And so they kept sort of flocking to the filming locations. Jonathan Turner did his best to assist Ron Jones in dealing with the onlookers. And in the transmitted version of Arkham Infinity, he's actually seen gesturing a group away from the scene where the Doctor and Nyssa are at the telephone box. And actually, at one point, his attempts at crowd control became dangerous when an elderly woman assumed he was a thief and attacked him. And all I can say is to Jonathan Turner of the 1980s, that's why you hire security to do that for you. You don't do it yourself. The Dutch street organ that plays and that transfixes Omega for a moment is playing Tulips from Amsterdam. This is the same music that's actually heard during the establishing shot at the start of episode one.
All right.
So, as we mentioned, we have Tegan back. I mean, she only left at the end of the previous story, but in terms of like a week-on-week thing, they did have the first episode and Tegan wasn't in it, and there seemed to be no indication to the viewer at the time that she would be in it. So she is the first companion to have rejoined the Doctor in his travels after having departed. The only other person who has a similar thing from the sort of viewer's perspective is possibly Stephen, in the sense that, like, at the end of the chase, the Doctor left thinking that he had left Stephen behind, and then obviously Stephen turned up. But this is the first time that, from a viewer's perspective, she left the end of last season. You've had however many months off. You come back, episode one, it's just the Doctor and Nyssa, and that's it. We do have another future Doctor appearing in this story, which is Colin Baker. Apparently, he played Maxell not as a guest role, but as someone who thinks that he's starring in his own series. And as a result, Jonathan Turner had to tell him that it's called Doctor Who, not the bloke who's a guard in the background. And there are several sort of in jokes that when that have like after Colin took over the role of the Doctor, where like obviously he shoots the Fifth Doctor, that like he was trying to, knock Peter off so he could take his job. Colin had to remove his helmet, which he nicknamed Esmerald, because it kept bumping into doorways and arches on the set. So that's why he spends most of the story with his helmet under his arm against his hip. He said it felt like he was carrying around a chicken, and so he took to calling the helmet the chicken.
Like, there's an awful lot of fucking plumage on that thing.
Ian Collier described Omega's costume as one of the most uncomfortable experiences of his life. Not only that, though, he did actually get burned during filming. When there's like the explosives and stuff, because they used metal plates to cover the charges, and they ended up burning him. I did think that when I was watching it, I was like, "Holy hell!" Like, going back to Amsterdam for a second, Peter Davison claimed that he was planning on using a dildo he purchased in Amsterdam as a weapon to kill Omega. But because they were running behind schedule, he didn't get a chance. I'm guessing that he was going to do like a whatever. But
yeah.
Apparently the cast found the Ergon costume quite laughable. Eric Saward claimed it was never described in the script and thought it was lunatic when he saw it. Johnny Byrne claimed it was a legitimate, less successful attempt at biosynthesis. That's what it was meant to be. I kind of saw it as the precursor to What's-His-Face from Moon Knight. The god in Moon Knight.
Khonshu,
thank you. Jonathan Turner never explained why he wanted Tegan back or why he left her behind. He never explained. Eric Saward thought that it was contrived, while Peter thought it was a ludicrous coincidence. Sarah Sutton apparently eventually grew to dislike running around Amsterdam, especially after 3 days of it. To be honest, I don't blame her. When you have Peter in his just trainers, you had Janet was in flats. And then you've got Sarah, who's been running around in those same fucking heels for the last year. I do not blame her. Eric Saward had claimed that Jonathan Turner wanted to film in Amsterdam for no rhyme or reason, and that all you could really do is run around the streets.
There are a lot of like statements by previous people that have worked on the crew that John Nathan Turner booked these destinations just because he wanted to go on holiday while they were doing the shooting.
Yeah. Going back to the Ergon for a second, you know, I said like people thought it looked ridiculous. Apparently it was originally envisaged as a sort of assemblage of bones. Kind of a bit like the xenomorph in Alien. But it didn't really work that way. The effect and the inclusion of a pterodactyl skull, which the guy in the suit basically wore as a hat, didn't come off as intended, and there was no time really to fix it, so that's why they had it this out. Although Richard Gregory of Imagineering was so happy to make a design that he wove his initials into the design on the chest plate, the costume was problematic. Imagineering had incorporated servos to move the flaps covering Omega's mouth, which proved to be so loud they couldn't actually be used. In the original script, the Lord President was actually unnamed, but then they eventually decided that that would be Barusa. Apparently, one of the reasons why J&T picked Amsterdam, BBC had recently shot Triangle there, maybe? Potential reason. Before we go into our cast proper, a couple of people who were considered for different roles. So Sean Arnold and Patrick Stewart were considered for the role of the Castellan. And Peter Cushing was considered for the role of Omega. And now I really want a version of this story with Patrick Stewart and Peter Cushing in it.
Yes, I do as well.
can we have that? Like, please? Although he obviously played Omega in part four because Omega took on his likeness, Peter Davison was not actually credited for that. He was only credited as the Doctor. So let's go on to our cast credits. So as Damon, we have Neil Daglish. This is the only Doctor Who acting credit for Neil. His non-Who credits include EastEnders, Secret Army, Casualty, The Bill, and Crown Court. Robin is played by Andrew Boxer. Again, only Doctor Who acting credit here for Andrew. His non-Who credits include Absolution, Give Us This Day, The Two of Us, We'll Meet Again, and Angels. The Castellan is sadly not played by Patrick Stewart, but is played by Paul Jericho. This is the first of two Doctor Who appearances for Paul. We will see him again in The Five Doctors. His non-Who work includes Space 1999, Force 10 from Navarone, Emmerdale, Grange Hill, Howard's Way, and The Adventures of Robin Hood. President Barusa is played by Leonard Sachs. This is the second and final Doctor Who appearance for Leonard. We previously saw him way back when as Admiral Gaspard de Coligny in The Massacre. Hedden is played by Michael Goff. How did we say we pronounce his name?
Goff.
Goff, thank Goff. You. This is the second and final appearance from Michael. We previously saw him way back when, also in a First Doctor story. This time it was the Celestial Toymaker, or now that character is just referred to as the Toymaker.
The Toymaker.
We would have seen his return in that role had season 23 not been cancelled. Apparently there was plans to bring him back. But this is Michael's final on-screen contribution to Doctor Who. As Maxell, as I have mentioned, we have Colin Baker. This is the first Doctor Who acting credit for Colin. We will talk more about Colin when he takes on the mantle of the Doctor, so we'll save his other credits and stuff for that point.
Yeah.
Omega, who you had listed in your notes as the Renegade, so presumably not to spoil the surprise for me.
Yes.
It's played by, as I mentioned, Ian Collier. This is the second and final on-screen credit for Ian. We previously saw him as Stuart Hyde in The Time Monster. To keep his return as Omega Surprise, Collier was actually billed in the end credits as The Renegade for parts 1 and 2, with the billing becoming Omega for parts 3 and 4. Stuart passed away in 2008. As Colin, we have Alistair Cumming. Only Doctor Who acting credit for Alistair. His non-Who credits include Merlin, Grange Hill, Velvet Goldmine, Skin, and Welcome to the Punch. I do have to wonder if Alistair Cumming is any relation to Alan Cumming, because they do look very similar.
I can take a look for you.
I checked IMDb and it doesn't list it. But they look very similar.
Well, they're both Scottish. Oh, sorry, no, that's Alan Cumming. I looked up by accident. Let's see.
I don't think they are, because I think IMDb would have flagged it.
Yeah, I think they would have. He only has one brother, Tom.
Yeah, they look similar, though. Thalia or Thalia, the ever-present Percy Jackson question, is it Thalia or Thalia? It's played by Elizabeth Gray. Only on-screen Doctor Who credit for Elizabeth, though she did provide the voice of Hera, but another Greek character, in the Big Finish audio story Immortal Beloved. Her non-Who credits include The Grey Lady, A Life of Bliss, Faulty Towers, Inspector Morse, Agatha Christie's Poirot, Four Weddings and a Funeral, and Dinner Ladies, which is actually one of my favourite TV shows ever. Elizabeth passed away in 2013. Zorak, there's Max Harvey, only Doctor Who acting credit for Max. His non-Who credits include Only Fools and Horses, 84 Charing Cross Road, 1990, and Blackadder 2. Max passed away in 2006. Lastly, as the Ergon, or in the Ergon suit, we have Malcolm Harvey. And this is the only Doctor Who credited role for Malcolm, though he did have an uncredited role as a citizen in Full Circle. His non-Who credits include stunt work on Hollow Reed, Speak Like a Chile, and London's Burning. And his only other acting credit is in Blake 7.
And just going back to Max Harvey's previous credits, Blackadder 2 is my third favourite season of Blackadder.
What a random way of phrasing that. Blackadder 2, a season of Blackadder that made it into the top 3. It's not his favourite.
No,
it's not his second favourite. But it did make the top three.
Yes, it did. Apparently, controversially, my favourite season of Blackadder is Blackadder the third. So, the third season.
I always just get them. The only one I don't get confused is Blackadder Goes Forth, because that one's very obvious. I do get all the other ones confused as to which one's which.
Yeah, no, Blackadder the third is the Butler one. Blackadder four goes forth is World War One. Blackadder the second is the one with Queen Elizabeth. And Blackadder the first is the alternate history where, rather than killing the princes in the tower, Richard the third adopted them. And he loved them so much that one of them grew up to be Brian Blessed.
Aww.
Yeah. Thank you so much for all that interesting trivia.
You are very welcome.
And as always, I think we went on a tangent with the trivia, which is good.
At this point, they know that that's going to happen.
Absolutely.
And if they don't, welcome. We're yes. glad to have you. Stick around.
Now, welcome to the most tangent-driven fucking part of the podcast, which is the character discussion. Where Trish and I objectively are meant to discuss the Doctor, the companions, prominent characters, and villains, but we always end up talking about random shite as well as we go along. It's part of our charm. So, this week, we have the Doctor, we have the companions of Tegan and Nyssa, and then we have a slew of prominent characters. We have Damon, we have Robin, we have the Castellan, Barusa, Hedin, Maxell, and then for the villain, I put in Omega. We're not going to be discussing Council Lady Thalia or Council Manzorek because they don't contribute anything. They're there. Nor are we discussing Colin because he is just a plot device as it goes on. Nor are we discussing the Ergon.
I would say two things.
Yes.
One, in terms of Thalia, I do quite like her because she seems to be the like technical expert of the group,
yes.
which I quite like. And in terms of Hedin, would you put him or Maxell at the bottom of the prominent characters leaning into villain?
I would. So, the way that I would rank it in terms of that capacity is, I wouldn't put Maxell down that far, because I would replace Maxell in that conversation. I'd put the Castellan in his position instead. Hedin is, Hedin is an interesting thing because of what we're not told in this story,
which is the why.
Yes. Yeah, we're not told how bad things are on Gallifrey that warning the return of Omega is heralded as a good sign. But we can discuss that more when we get down to it. We can leave heading towards the latter end of the prominent character discussion if you want.
I think so,
because, I think, and I would put the Castellan down there as well. So we'll start off as always with the Doctor, and because you were the socials, you get to go first. So what are your thoughts on the Doctor? Brand new season.
Brand new season. Have my thoughts changed? They had changed for the first portion of this story. I really liked him and Nyssa working on the TARDIS. I liked him on Gallifrey initially. And I liked all that kind of stuff. Where I started being like, oh, fuck it, it's this again, was, one, I felt that he sort of had a bit of a Patrick Troughton moment with Nyssa where, like, he clearly had a plan that he wasn't telling her, or, like, he was formulating a plan and not including her in it at one point. And then, Paddy, what the fuck was with his face when Tegan said, I guess you're stuck with me. Or I'm back with you again. Or what, I can't remember the exact wording. Because seriously, I am now 100% convinced that the only companion this man actually likes is Nyssa. And that he left Tegan on purpose, hoping he'd never see her again. And the fact that she's now just invited herself to return to traveling with him, he's like, ah, fuck. She said it in front of Nyssa, I can't say no. Because Nyssa really likes her. And I suppose I have to let Nyssa have a friend. Fair enough. Like, the look on his face, and like, that's the look that ends the story. And I'm like, next story better fucking explain that look, because otherwise he is back to being a prick. Like, his relationship with Nyssa, I really love. I love Nyssa and the Doctor together. And particularly at the start of this story, I loved the two of them bantering back and forth, the two of them working together to fix the TARDIS. He clearly puts a lot of trust in Nyssa for the most part. There was a little bit of like him being disappointed at her using a gun, but I'm sure we'll talk about that when we get to Nyssa. But like, he clearly likes spending time with her and he likes her as a companion. And then you have his reaction to Tegan. And again, I was just like, you know, this story started, like, oh my god, we're getting over time flies, blah, blah, blah. And it's that look on his face of, fuck it, I thought I left her behind. How the fuck did she find me again? And shit, she got fired. She's got nothing to do. So, to put it bluntly, I quite liked him in the first half. Was a bit iffy on him, like, episode 3 into episode 4. And then at the end, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, the prick is back. How about you?
Christ, but he's some fucking punt in this story. Yeah. For new listeners, punt is the word that we use, so we can't say the other word.
Well, we think we can, but we know that people wouldn't want us to.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We've only used it once, and that was to describe Emperor Palpatine. No, like, I agree with you. At the start of the story, he's not too bad, because it's like, it's him and Nyssa, and they're, you know, they're their dynamic duo. And basically from, I think, yeah, part 3 onwards, he just becomes more and more of an asshole. So, like, as you had stated previously, the Doctor has, even like the very thought of one of his companions actually being tortured has him kind of go, nope, look, whatever, I'll tell you, you know. Here he sits and watches as Tegan gets tortured.
Well, floats and watches.
Yeah, floats and watches. And like, that's not something the Doctor would, even if, like, you know, the thing of like an illusion, they would still be very apprehensive over putting them at risk. Then there was like him getting snappy at Nyssa when she expressed her concern for Tegan. Like, if you go in there, he could kill Tegan, and he just essentially tells her to, you know, just shut up and do as I tell you. That's what it kind of boils down to. And it's like, and then when I say, like, oh, it's, you know, she's concerned for her friend being the operative word, because clearly the Doctor does not give a fuck about Tegan. Then, oh yeah, and then just kind of coming casually back and going, oh, by the way, Tegan's okay. I just, like, as if that's not good enough to make up for the way that you fucking behaved to her, you know?
Yeah.
What else was there? Oh, as well, the final showdown with Omega. It's like, you know, like, why couldn't you just have been happy where you were? It's like, you went to where he was before. It was, there was nothing. He was by himself. He went insane because of his isolation. That's like telling, like, a fucking, a guy that's accidentally fallen into the fucking seventh level of hell, ah, you'll be fine, just, you know, you'll get accustomed to it, you know. It's such a fucking dickish thing to say, because I actually did feel a small bit of sympathy for Omega at one point. I think we even expressed sympathy for Omega back when we did the Three Doctors, because of his, he is kind of a tragic figure. But then, like, as you say, at the very end, it's like, Christ, you barely have the strength to keep a smile on your face when Tegan says that she can travel with you again. And it just... I wonder what the conversation the doctor had with Nyssa after they left her in the airport. Like, how did he convince her not to go back immediately or later or something? Like, surely there's going... And then, like, there's surely going to have to be words next story to bring all this to a head or something, like, because...
Yeah, because, like, I need to pop a pin in something for a second, because you were talking about his reaction to Tegan being tortured, and but I'm going to pop a pin in that for a second, because I don't want to come back around to it. But again, I had not expected him to leave Nyssa behind, or leave Tegan behind last story, because obviously the most I've seen of them together, by watching The Five Doctors once, like 12 years ago, was in the most recent Jodie Whittaker's last story, where those two characters meet again.
Yeah.
And so I took from that meeting that, like, I didn't expect this to have been the dynamic they had.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know, I get that there was the underlying tension about Adric in the context of that episode. But, like, this type of relationship is not what I was expecting. And, like, not only is he a bit blasé about, like, oh yeah, Tegan's fine, whatever. But, like, Tegan has just said that her cousin has been under Omega's influence this whole time. And she's like, oh, Colin's waking up. And he's like, come on, Tegan, like, help me. And she's like, fucker, like, my cousin hasn't eaten in days, and blah, blah, blah. Just no consideration whatsoever. And this assumption that she will jump to his beck and call. And then this, ah, fuck, when, oh, wait, she jumped to my beck and call. She acted like part of the team again. So she's going to want to be part of the team again. Oh, wait, no, that's not what I wanted. That's not what I wanted. Well, then you shouldn't have acted like it was.
Hmm.
The other thing, like, in terms of Tegan being tortured, like, I think back to Genesis of the Daleks, where Nidor turns on the machine.
Yeah.
Sarah and Harry cry out once, telling him not to give in. And he breaks. And he's like, nope, stop it. I'll tell you everything. Given how long she is screaming for, it's just like, dude, what the hell? Like, you would expect that type, like, her, the way Omega was treating her and for how long he was, you'd be expecting the doctor to be like, I don't know anything. I don't know anything. Like, I don't have information to give you. I don't have support to give you. I can't do what you're asking me. You'd expect him to be sort of, like, emotional and, like, you know, that he would only let it happen because there is nothing he can do. There is no information he can give to Omega. Hence why Omega is torturing Tegan. And, like, you'd expect that, like, emotional response of, like, stop, I don't know anything. Like, stop hurting her. But he doesn't seem to give a shit. He does not give a fiddler's monkey. And I'm like, okay. Fair enough. Do you know? I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, and I'm curious to see if the next story picks up directly after this one. Or is it going to jump a bit and we're just expected to accept that this is the dynamic they have and then move on to the next story as never mentioned ever again? Because if that's the way they do it, I'll actually be quite upset and I will feel really bad, not only for Tegan, the character in the Doctor universe, but also a bit for Janet Fielding, because, like I said, we're watching it, and I don't know if people at the time got the sense that, like, the Doctor didn't want Tegan around. Which, when you're the actor playing that character, that mustn't feel great. Do you know? Like, I don't see that sort of helping the fans like Janet in any great way. if that's the way they see the Doctor treating her character on screen. Do you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. He started off right and then he ended up a dickhead.
Yeah.
Which seems to be par for the course, so.
So, moving on to the companions. So, who do you want to discuss first?
Let's do Nyssa first, I think, then we can circle back to Tegan again. Mm. So, with Nyssa, I loved their first few scenes of Nyssa and the Doctor. I love the two of them, like, teching the tech, because, again, we get to see the trust he has in her.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, he sees her as an equal in that realm. You know, he trusts her to fix things, he shows her how to fix things. You know, she can take the mickey out of him a little bit. She's like, okay, we fixed this thing, now can we fix this other thing? Because you never seem to be able to pilot to where we need to go, etc. I love that. It was great. I thought her pleas to the High Council were heartbreaking.
Mm.
And again, if you think about Nyssa, because again, they kept referring to her as Nyssa of Traken, right? Mm-hmm. Which is just how people generally refer to her. Which I always find interesting, because no one refers to, like, Tegan as Tegan of Earth, but she's Nyssa of Traken, because she's the last surviving person mm-hmm. of Traken. She has lost everything. She's lost Tegan, as far as she knows. Adric died. Her whole family is gone. Her whole planet is gone. And now they're about to kill the Doctor. And, like, her pleas are so heart-wrenching. And I actually loved seeing her turn up in the room when he's about to be terminated with the gun and just being, like, it's her last-ditch effort. That, Doctor, is what a fucking friend does. That's how a friend gets emotional when people are going to do terrible things to their friend. That's how they do everything they can to jump in and help. And I really quite liked Nyssa in this story. I think it's interesting how she was treated when you consider that Leela had to be sent off out into the wastelands for most of the story where she was on Gallifrey. And obviously Jamie and Zoe had their memories wiped. So it's nice to see the High Council of Time Lords are becoming more and more accepting of the people in the Doctor's life.
Mm.
Even though they probably don't accept that the Doctor drags these people into his life, they don't hold it against the person, which is nice. They seemed really nice to Nyssa. You get the sense that, like, had the Doctor effectively died, they wouldn't have held that against Nyssa. They wouldn't have, you know, thrown her in prison or anything. I kind of get the sense they would have let her stay and taught her and whatever, which was nice. I liked seeing her working with Damon. I think those two got along quite well. And I just loved seeing her reunion with Tegan. Again, I totally see what people see in those two.
Yeah.
As a pairing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, no, I think this is probably one of the strongest Nyssa stories we've had in a while, because Definitely. It has all of the emotion that you and I felt was missing last season, particularly when she was interacting with the Master on several occasions last season. All of that emotion we felt was missing from those interactions we got in this one, which I think was really good. I rambled for a while. What are your thoughts on this?
Hey, no, because if you want to talk about a character you like, by all means, ramble on. Nyssa being such a badass in the story misses when we were playing Blood and Iron and Henry. So, for people part of a role-playing game, myself and Trish were part of a group of, we went to Gallifrey, and my character basically dealt with a shitload of custodian guards. yeah, so that was fun. But Nyssa is so good in the story. She really is. Like, in terms of her technical acumen, like when the Doctor's building, like, that circuit breaker, she's building an antimatter detector.
Mm.
She's not building it quite from scratch. Like, she's retrofitting and, like, another detector, like, so that they can detect antimatter molecules. That's not a scientific term, but fuck it. So I really enjoyed that. The almost like Princess Leia type fucking vibe, where she takes the blaster and she has no qualms dealing with the guards to go and rescue the doctor. Standing up to the council, standing up to the doctor quite a bit in the story as well. Like not like standing up on behalf of Tegan, and then just kind of reluctantly backing down as he told her to follow his instructions. But the dynamic duo of her and Damon working really well together, it was so good. We haven't seen a Tegan like this properly since, I want to say,
Anessa.
Earthshock. Sorry, Nyssa, yeah, my apologies. We haven't seen a Nyssa like this properly since, I think, Earthshock.
Yeah. I would have liked to see more of Nyssa in Amsterdam. Because I love how she is the one who quickly realizes when the doctor tries to use the phone that she's like, "You don't have any fucking
Yeah.
money, you dumbass."
Or when she knocks down the old lady as they're running and she tries to help her with her shopping, and the doctor's being more help or being more hindrance than help, because he just causes more shopping to fucking fall out. I actually have a comment about the Amsterdam sequence, all right, but I think I'll save it till later on. But no, this was a very strong performance from Nyssa.
Yeah. I think it shows that Sarah can hold her own and be the driving companion.
Yeah.
She doesn't always have to be the support for the other companion. She doesn't always have to be the girl in the chair. She can drive as well as
Yeah.
anybody else.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now we have Tegan.
Yes. So I think in many ways, because like I said, this is the first time we've had a companion ostensibly leave or be left behind and then return at a later date. And I think this is because of that nature, I think this is the first time we really see an example of how companions continue after the Doctor, right? Because obviously, from our point of view, this is one big connected story, and we're jumping back and forth between the Doctor and Nyssa and Tegan on Earth the entire time. From Nyssa's point of view, or from Tegan's point of view, though, this is an Earth-based problem that then gets weirder and weirder. And she says, "Oh, this is like something the Doctor would deal with," but the Doctor isn't there. She doesn't think this is anything to do with the Doctor. This is, from her perspective, this is just a weird thing happening on Earth. And there she is, it's her cousin. She's going to find him. She's going to fight for him. She's going to do whatever, which I really like. And it really does sort of put credence behind, in later, quote unquote, modern Doctor Who, when we find out that, Torchwood had archives on all of the companions. And UNIT had files on all of the companions, and why would they need those? Well, this is exactly why, because these people will continue investigating. In this search, the whole idea of the fact that Sarah Jane continued on afterwards. Now, obviously, we had Kanan and company, so we knew that anyway. But this idea that she continued investigating afterwards, here it is in the main show, showing yeah, this is what companions do. Chronologically, Sarah Jane was doing it earlier, but fans of the time wouldn't have necessarily known that. But also, when we get to the Sarah Jane Adventures, and there's the episode that has Joe Grant in it, and Sarah starts listing off a charitable Earth and Ben and Polly and Tegan, she starts rattling them off, and it sort of shows that Russell T Davies, when he was putting that together, he didn't put that together as a way of saying that it's something that he just made up, that all the companions continued doing that afterwards. It's here in classic as well to know that of course they did. She wasn't going to run from it, which I really, really liked. Again, she meets him again at the end, but she didn't know that that would happen, and she still investigated and did everything herself. the way, again, we would have seen Tegan of Legopolis do. You know, she's a woman who is independent and can do her own thing, and she can change a tire, no problem, etc.
Mm-hmm.
I would have expected more of a reaction at the end. So I was kind of waiting for the explosion of, why the fuck did you leave me behind? As opposed to her laughing, being like, oh, I got fired. I'm totally free now. And I'm like, okay, you got fired from your dream job. Why? Why did you get fired? What happened there? And I sort of see it because the way Janet plays it, she sort of rattles that off very quickly. I'm like, are you trying not to explode at him in front of Nyssa because you know it's not Nyssa's fault and she doesn't deserve to be witness to that? because if I was her, I would have gone absolutely batshit on him. Do you know? But whatever. I think her interactions with Omega were interesting. I would say I'm not a big fan of Janet's tortured acting. I thought it was a bit much in the sense of just the way she portrayed it, but that's just personal preference. And I love how dedicated she is to her cousin.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, she puts her foot down with the doctor, but it's like, no, I have to see to Colin, you donkey. Like, I didn't come here with you, remember? but yeah, no, overall I liked her in the story. Would have liked to have seen more of a reaction at the end, like I said. I'm hoping we do get that confrontation and they don't just gloss over it, because Tegan deserves answers and she deserves to have her piece on that. What about you?
I agree. And you actually raise a very interesting point there that the companions carry on the spirit of, like, being associated with the doctor into their regular lives. And one person I would have loved to have seen, because obviously they're not mentioned because they didn't return to their contemporary time. They didn't return to a contemporary time period. Victoria. I would love to know what happens with Victoria after when she gets left behind. But staking on with Tegan, now, while she's not hugely big driving the plot, to me she wasn't. She was there, it was great seeing, like, basically she hadn't lost anything of the grit she had developed during her time with the doctor. Like, rushing in to save Colin, like, you know, dangers be damned. And then basically standing up to Omega. Like, yeah, look, you're fucking trapped. There's a guy with a big weird skeletal bird. You're a prisoner. Your cousin's a basically zombie. The only guy helping you was like a fucking stalk of straw. Notice she's a very strong presence in that aspect of the story. It was really good. And I'm probably not going to be able to save this thought for the rest of the conversation, because I think inevitably we're going to have topics about all the various characters. Is there's so much unnecessary scenes and extended footage in this story that I think the ending to part three would have been better when Omega is revealed that he's a duplicate of the Doctor's body. End it on that, and then we have one full episode of the guys trying to stop Omega as he is trying to get away from Amsterdam back to Gallifrey or something like that. Because, and then, like, we also have one episode, we have an episode where we can potentially deal with the Doctor and Tegan having their blow up. There's a lot of unnecessary stuff that happens in the story that takes away from actual good development for the characters.
Yeah, I'd agree. I do have a few points on that for my overall later on.
Yeah. So, will we proceed on to the prominence?
Yeah.
So, we have five. We have, and in no particular order, we have Maxwell, Robin, Damon, Barossa, and the Castellan. What okay, order would you like to put them in? Oh, sorry. I know I...
We're doing head and last, yeah.
Yeah, sorry.
I think let's do our pseudo-story-based companions first, which would be Damon for the Doctor and Nyssa, and Robin for Tegan. So we start with Damon. It's nice to meet a Time Lord who remains nice throughout the entire story. Mm-hmm. And who at no point in time you think is going to be a backstabber. At yep, no point absolutely. In time are you waiting for the gasp reveal. He was the bad guy all along. Damon's just a nice guy. He's a nice guy who does his job. He does his job well. He's aware of the importance of his job. And he's not a fucking moron. You know, like, in... Like, when we were first introduced to him, like, he does everything by the book.
Mm.
But the fact that he even admits that, like, he didn't reveal the information to the High Council because he knows there had to be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And he's conscious and cognizant of that throughout the entire story. But he's also, like, he has a lot of responsibility in terms of, like, what he does. Like, he was the one recalling the TARDIS, blah, blah, blah. He also has enough independence and self-awareness and free will to, A, like, to withhold that information, but then to make his own judgment on the Doctor.
Mm.
And to sort of realize that there's something happening here. Like, there's a plan in motion here, which obviously turns out to be the Castellan and Maxwell's plan, involving the Doctor, and he does not deserve it. You know, like,
yeah.
This is ridiculous. And so he does things that maybe he normally wouldn't do. Like, he prints off the Doctor's bioscan information or access information to show the Doctor and whatever. And, like, I did quite like that he was just, you know, determined to not see an innocent person treated unfairly.
Yeah.
Which is not something that we would often see on Gallifrey, from what we've seen in previous stories.
No. Gallifrey is kind of like a snake pit.
Yeah. The only Gallifrey that I can really, like, the only, like, version of Gallifrey that we've seen that I would really compare Damon to would actually be from the Three Doctors and, like, that group of people in the command room who were, like, trying to get the First Doctor to be able to communicate with the other two and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah,
I think that he would have worked, like, well in that group.
Yeah, that was a Lord President, a Chancellor, and a fucking, like, a senior technician. Like,
yeah, so, but I think he would have worked well with that group of that time. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're probably the only other group of Time Lords that weren't complete assholes. No, I suppose you got Leela's boyfriend as well, I suppose.
Don't forget Ronan. Proto-Romana.
Oh, yeah, Proto-Romana. Proto-Romana's cool. And also, Damon works well with everyone. He works well with Nyssa. He works well with the Doctor for as much as the Doctor will let him. And he works well on his own. So, yeah, I really quite liked him. Again, he's a type of character, but obviously I know from, like, the casting that, like, we don't see him again, or at least not played by the same actor. But he is a character that I would like to see in a sort of, like, he sort of strikes me a bit like a Benton role, where, like,
yeah,
I would like to see him more so than the Lord President or the Castellan or Athalia. Be someone that if the Doctor goes back to Gallifrey again, he is the touch point, do you know? Because he's a nice character. But yeah, how about you?
Well, first off, I think he's a dead ringer for Fred Willard. So, like, I was kind of drawn to him off that regards. But no, like, throughout the entire story, I'm just consistently impressed by his intelligence. Like, he realizes that he's in a, like, if you take out the Omega part of it, it's a political thriller that's going on. And he's fucking caught in the middle of it. He's the guy with the fucking, the evidence. And he doesn't know who to trust. And he's playing a very dangerous game by associating with the Doctor and testing the limits of the Castellan. And he does it very well because, as you said, he knows it's the right thing to do. And I loved his interactions with Nyssa. Even before that, his thing with the Castellan, just any sort of a thing with, you know, Maxwell planted a recording device, and he goes, oh no, the Castellan gave us permission to speak in private. Like, just fucking straight off his own head, he comes up with that thing to try and, like, are you going to dare challenge the Castellan's word? So yeah, I love that. But no, his relationship with Nyssa and their teamwork together was great. And I obviously, look, there's the relation, like, I see why, again, I agree with you, why people ship Nyssa and Tegan. But you never know, down the line, you could have seen something like that happen between Damon and Nyssa because of how well they worked together. And you can clearly tell, like, that there was concern for both parties there.
Yeah, like, I would prefer Damon and Nyssa versus Leela and that guy.
Yes, Andred.
Andred. And definitely Joe and Dr. Jones.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, if this was an exit story in the vein of
Green Death,
Leela's exit, or... I wouldn't have been as pissed off if Nyssa stayed with him.
Yeah, because, like, there's good chemistry there between the two of them. It was really like, they're both scientists to, like, to a degree. I think he's more of a
technician.
Yeah, exactly.
But still.
But yeah, like, I think there's crossover there. But no, and that, I think that's the problem we have, like, sometimes when we have, like, I was going to say stories based on Gallifrey, but now that I think of it, like, how many other fucking one-off companions have we seen that we'd love for them to go back and have another adventure with, you know?
Which, in fairness, like, skipping the timeline massively, I think is something that the modern era of Doctor... I say modern, like, I mean, the modern era of Doctor Who has now been running for 19 years. Yeah. But the 2005 onwards era of Doctor Who, I think they managed to do very well in revisiting sometimes random previous characters. Now, I don't always like those characters.
I think it's because, like, but
they do go back.
Yeah, I think it's because, like, there's, like, a shorter turnaround with the, like, with the seasons and things like that. You've only got, like, 13 stories, so therefore it's not as much of a kind of, like, a stretch to go back to those characters, you know? And then we have Robin.
Okay. Robin has a heart of gold, is sketchy as fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Heart of gold, clearly a good friend, sketchy as fuck. Why do I say he's sketchy as fuck? He's backpacking presumably around mainland Europe, but particularly through Amsterdam. He has recently met up with Colin. And I say that because he knows about this crypt thing and Colin didn't. So I imagine they're recent friends. But what I say is super sketch is he doesn't explain how he knows about this crypt. And he's kind of a bit sussy bringing him down there. The way, I don't know the way the actor just plays it or whatever, but it's like, what have you been doing in this crypt, Robin? Like, but also, dude, go to an embassy and they'll arrange for you to get a replacement passport. Like, it's like, oh, it's a policeman. Quick, hide me. Why? What's your problem? I don't have a passport. I'm like, okay, go to an embassy. Go to an embassy, Robin. Go to an embassy. Also, like, don't do anything to make the policeman ask for your ID. You know, just exist as a normal human being and don't do anything fucking sus. What were you doing that you're afraid that the policeman will talk to you? Also, you walked into a fucking police station earlier, told them this, or later, tell them all the story, also without a passport, but then you're afraid to go back in again because you don't have a passport. I don't know. I think Robin, he's got a heart of gold, in fairness to him. And he seems like a good friend. I just find him super suspicious. And not suspicious in a bad way, but like, dude, what are you hiding? How much drugs have you done? Just be honest. Like, just, it's okay. We're not going to judge you. We're not going to judge you. But like, what were you doing smoking and then going sleeping in crypts? Like, you know. That was pretty much my thought.
Okay. The first thing that comes to my head is, brave Sir Robin ran away, bravely ran away, away. But, so two things. One, I understand that you're in a stressful situation. I understand that the police aren't really paying attention to you. There's no need to be a prick to the poor fucking hostess at the hostel. She's perfectly nice, perfectly polite, and you fucking blow up at her. Like, so, no, just don't need to be an asshole. The second thing is, I am pretty sure that there were a lot, like, even back in the 80s, there's a lot more options to sleep or stay somewhere that are open 24 hours in Amsterdam that don't require you to sleep in a fucking crypt. Like, all you have to do is find a 24-hour place that you can stay in, you know, obviously give them business so they don't fucking kick you out, and then wait for the hostel the following day to have your room ready, and then you can sleep the fucking following day.
Or find another hostel. It's Amsterdam.
Well, apparently all the hostels they looked at were booked.
I don't believe that.
Yeah. But like, even if fucking worst comes to worst, fucking sleep in a doorway. I would say sleep in a playground, but then obviously if you're fucking caught, you're on the register. But I agree, his heart is in the right place because he's not a complete coward, because one, he tries not to leave without Colin the first time. The second time, he refuses to abandon Tegan. Like, he runs in after her. And granted, you know, he gets fucking shot, and that ends the input of Robin into the story. Like, he doesn't really contribute much afterwards. But he is, as I say, he's not a complete coward, which is handy, because without him, you know, Tegan doesn't fucking reunite with the Doctor and Nyssa.
Or reunite with Nyssa, the other one.
I said the Doctor and Nyssa, so
yeah, or just Nyssa.
Like, oh, just Nyssa, yeah, absolutely, yeah. No, I agree. Then there is, so we have Maxel and then Barusa, or Barusa and Maxel.
I do Barusa first. Barusa to me is, he's okay. He's there. You do get the sense that he is under a lot of pressure. And, like, I don't think the Castellan is strong-arming him into a solution. I think he is considering all options to him, and he's just like, it's horrendous what I'm going to say, but yes, we're going to destroy you to stop this from happening. And I do get the sense that, like, he does feel bad about it. Like, if he thought there was another option, another timely option, put that way, I do think he would have done something else. But to his mind, there isn't time to come up with an alternative. So this is what we have. Now, the whole setup of, oh, it was the Lord President the whole time. I'm like, well, oh, no, it fucking wasn't. Because the script of the earlier interactions with Omega clearly made it out that it wasn't him. So that setup went nowhere. And I have a bit of that in the overall. Overall, he was there as a character. I mean, could they have done the exact same story without him? Yeah, pretty much, I think. He was there. He made a dickish decision, but I think he made it for the right reasons. How about you?
Oh, I don't know who the fuck this character is, but it's not Barusa. But that much. Like, even Wish Regeneration, and we've seen two different incarnations of Barusa now so far. He's a prick all the time. This version is a kitten in fucking comparison. Like, yeah, they have a tough choice ahead of them. Like, kill one person to... It's like, just take the domino out of the chain, you know? And you get the logic behind it. But it's like, you almost get the impression like that two more seconds and he would have gone and down and given Nyssa a hug, as opposed to the actual Barusa, who'd be like, pull yourself together, woman, see the bigger picture. Look, he's there. He's an ally to the Doctor more than he's a willing ally more than the usual kind of thorn, pain in the ass in the side that eventually comes around, as we've seen him previously. So it's, that in itself is interesting. But again, it's like, and I have comments about Omega and stuff earlier on, but it's like, did you watch the previous stories with these characters to nail down their personality traits? Even if you are going down the route of regeneration, we know that the Doctor has the same mannerisms and the same everything to all his previous incarnations. He just has a different distinctive flair. Here, we've seen two different versions of Barusa. As I said, they're both little condescending, sniping pricks. Why is this one suddenly, you know, would you like a cup of tea, Mrs. Doyle version?
I suppose I didn't really compare him to his previous selves. Just because it's a fresh actor with a fresh regeneration, I didn't go back. But you're right, though. In terms of Barusa, the overarching character, it is a stark contrast.
Yeah. And then we have Macphail.
Big, strong man hiding behind his cape. And his chicken hat. Maxil is a character we've seen in multiple iterations of before.
Yeah.
This is just a Time Lord version. Mm-hmm. He's an asshole. He's an asshole who relishes his job to the point where he overdoes it. Because I don't know if you know, like, several times he says, you know, oh, we're allowed to kill the doctor. I will kill the doctor if he... That's not what the Castellan said. Like, he's sort of taking the spirit of the Castellan's orders and adding his own flair to it. His own violent, vindictive flair. And I'm like, did you two go to school together? Has he forgotten who you are and you have this, like, underlying desire to watch him burn? Or are you just that guy? That guy who takes his job so seriously that when he gets told, oh yeah, top secret information, you know, we're going to have to kill this guy because of X, he's like, cool, I have to kill this man. And that's literally all he thinks about. Like, I think it was a great portrayal by Colin. Like, obviously, I haven't seen Colin's stories as the Doctor, but, like, I kind of get a bit of what John Turner was saying. It's like Maxwell behaves as if he is the hero of his own story. Do you know, in the sense that, like, often he's like, oh, the villain is the hero of his own story. I don't think Maxwell's a villain. I think he's a bit of a dickhead. But in his mind, he is the hero of Gallifrey. You know, with his lovely flowy white cape. So yeah, that I find him very weird in the sense that, like, you get the sense because you're meant to think that the Castellan is like giving him all these orders, and he realizes the Castellan is telling him like, "Oh, make sure the doctor stays in his room," and he's like, "I will make sure the doctor stays in his room. If he tries to leave his room, I will kill him." I was like, "That's not what he fucking said." Oh, put on your listening ears, listen to what he said. Do you know? I think Max Owen made a very good Klingon. How would you?
Oh, that imperious look, that stiff upper lip, that chicken helmet. I was trying to think of like a perfect analogy for Maxwell, and it just came to my mind. Do you remember Lord Kiley, the commander of the Irish Company in Sharp's battle? When they take on that French battalion that's like very wolf themed.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
Sure.
him. Like the fella that's like so pompous and up his own arse in like the small ceremonial role that he has as a commander of the Irish bodyguard. But to be fair to Maxwell, he's actually decent at his job because like it's his he sends his men to search, you know, for the doctor and all that kind of stuff. But then he's doing his own independent investigation into the technical side of things. So he's like, here's my analysis report of the termination machine. It was tampered with. Here's the confirmation that the doctor's bio data, all this kind of stuff was taken. That's Maxwell doing that. So while, yeah, look, he's loves the fucking cut of himself in the uniform, and you know, he swans around like his shit don't stink. He's actually competent at his job, so you have to give that to him.
Yeah,
He
and that's true.
he's very gung ho.
I suppose the end of it is like, do you remember the Agent Carter, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. dub Smash Wars?
Yes.
And do you remember the announcement video they did for like the official like dub Smash competition, like the charity event that they were doing? And it was, by the way, if no one knows what I'm talking about, like go onto YouTube. Agent Carter dub smash, brilliant. You'll it's about an hour, maybe less, very well spent. But when they're doing that video, Chloe what's her face from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Oh, Chloe Bennett.
So they're doing the whole like, you know, and it's gonna be like a war of the brother, and she keeps chiming with to the death. I sort of imagine that's like that's what goes on in Maxwell's head. He's like, I will do this report, and I like again, no shade, like he's clearly very intelligent, but I imagine that at the end he's like, you know, I will put together this report and investigate this thing, and I will deliver this to the death. Like tone it down. They made it very clear they don't kill Time Lords very often, and you could tell he's like, I want to be the first one to do it. Can I do it, please? It's like, you need
Well,
therapy.
they said the only time they've only ever done it once before, and we know who that was for.
Yeah, but like, clearly Max was like, no, I want to be in a history book, and you're like, sweetheart, tone it down.
So now we come to our two remaining prominent characters slash potential villains. That's the Castellan and Hedden. Now, you're going first, so I'll allow you to pick the order you want to discuss them in.
I kind of want to discuss them together, because the way the story is set up, And this, I was going to leave this to my overall, but I think it makes sense to say it here. The reveal, gasp, it was the Lord President. Clearly, it fucking wasn't. Because we knew from earlier conversations between the cloaked figure and Omega that the cloaked figure was re referring to the Lord President, therefore, he wasn't the Lord President. The story is kind of written that the audience is meant to think, because of the way Castellan is also an asshole for the sake of being an asshole. But he's like that with everybody, so I kind of give him, like, he's not just doing that to the doctor, he's like that with everybody. Given the way he is, and like Maxwell being the extension of him, and this whole like to the death type mentality, it's clearly written that we're meant to think that the Castellan is the one who's helping Omega. And then we have the gasp big reveal that it's actually Hedon. The problem is, and I don't know if this is watching like as a modern viewer versus had you watched this live when it came out, it was obviously going to be Hedon. Like, it was so blatantly obvious that it was going to be Hedon, do you know, as you're watching it, because shocker, he's the one person who wants the doctor kept alive in a situation where the doctor being alive would allow Omega to take over. So, like, I get the way the Castellan is set up, and in fairness, like, the Castellan still does not, he does not support the doctor until the Lord President literally says, okay, fucker, like, stop being an asshole. It was clearly Hedon, like, stop being a dick. Do you know? Like, you know, collaborative working together now. And like it's so weird because like we're meant to hate the Castellan, and then we find out, oh no, it was Hedon who betrayed him, and like but like the Castellan was so negative that it was obviously not going to be him. But you know, like he was too negative, it was too obvious. I will say though, I do like that the Castellan is, I originally wrote my notes that he's not 100% irredeemable. I don't think that he's redeemable. I think he knows his duty. And when the Lord President basically says, dude, the doctor had nothing to do with it, let go of that fucking track of investigation and let's focus on the here and now. He's like, okay. My superior has given me the final thing. I will change over. And so then obviously he goes on to not be an asshole to the doctor for the rest of it. Hedon, I was like in my notes, I have like, no, Hedon. As if it wasn't blatantly obvious from the beginning that it was going to be you because the trope has been done to death. But maybe at the time it hadn't been. Do you know? Also, you played with Michael Goff, and I was just like, oh, hello. I haven't seen you on the show in a long time, and I kind of missed you. although I don't know if that's more so because I was not the biggest fan of the recasting of his previous character. And that is all down to personal preference, as we discussed when we discussed those episodes previously. But yeah, I think, yeah, I didn't buy the bait and switch. For me, it didn't work. But I don't know if that's just because the trope has now been done to death that I didn't buy into it at all. Like, I knew it wasn't the Castellan that was setting him up. So the bait and switch, I didn't really care. I've gone off on a weird tangent. I don't know why I did them together, but it made sense in my head when I started. You go. Talk about them individually or together. That's up to you.
So the one thing about the Castellan is that, as we've seen before, the Castellan is an inherited role. This isn't the same Castellan as the Invasion of Time, where he was an asshole. Nor is it the same Castellan as the Deadly Assassin, who was actually pretty cool. We both liked that Castellan. I think that this particular Castellan is, I think he's out to make a name for himself, and I get the impression he's making a power play for the role of presidency. Because the reason why I was reluctant to put Haddon fully into the building, first of all, why is it that Time Lords can only regenerate when it's convenient? Or are they not allowed to regenerate when they're shot? Because, like, surely it wasn't the cliche of, oh, it was his last regeneration. Like, I mean, for fuck's sake.
Hey, maybe that's why he wanted Omega. Maybe there's some, like, missing story beat about how regenerations aren't working, and it has something to do with the Matrix and...
Well, see, but this is the thing where, like, continuity in Doctor Who is kind of frustrating, because we're told that use of the Eye of Harmony can grant a new set of regenerations. So, and they know how to use the Eye of Harmony. But anyway, with Haddon is that, like, first of all, it's always weird when I see Michael Goff play a bad guy, because I'm so used to seeing him as Alfred in the Batman movies from the 90s. But how bad are things on Gallifrey that the return of Omega is heralded as something that's good? Because surely Omega's attempted invasion is a known thing, especially of the High Council, and it's probably included in the record books. But, like, and this kind of feeds into the whole thing of, is the Castellan making some sort of a power play like that? We've seen over, if you want to, we don't know what the time span is on Gallifrey, but between Deadly Assassin, Invasion of Time, and now this, there's a lot of upheaval on Gallifrey's structure, especially in the Citadel, because you had the assassination of the previous Lord President, the Eye of Harmony nearly destroying the Citadel, and the Doctor then becoming the Lord President. You had the invasion of the Vardans and then the Santarans on the back of that. You had the previous Castellan being a sort of collaborator type thing, and then Barossa taking over the presidency. So there's huge political upheaval going on here, and I'm like, is Haddon doing what he thinks is Haddon is doing what he obviously thinks is best for Gallifrey. And he's misguided in that. But does that make him a villain? An out-and-out villain? Or does he fall into that grey area that's just before we go into the villain group?
Yeah, and I think in terms of the story, he is the closest character, other than Omega, to a villain, in terms of the villain plot of the story. He is a collaborator with the villain of the story. I would be curious to know what his rationale was, because, you know, like, what I said, it was obvious. I don't know if it was obvious to you, but it was obvious to me that, like, it obviously wasn't the Castellan. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that was just obvious to me from the get-go. But even throughout all of it, you do still have the underlying sense that Haddon is not a bad person. Now, is it possible that that's just the version of Haddon we see? Like I said, there's been a lot of upheaval, but maybe he is also part of that upheaval, where he's seeing shadows where they aren't. And he's been radicalized in his own way. Do you know? You know, not everyone who believes in radical change is evil.
Yeah.
But what they're pushing for, retrospectively or from a distance, is the wrong thing. Do you know, an example I would give to this, it's a bit sort of timely, And I won't ask what you did because obviously that's your business. But in Ireland today, we had a referendum around the changing of the definition of family, and depending on who you speak to, the protection of women and mothers in the Constitution, depending on who you speak to and how they classify that part of it. I've heard people debating one way or t'other on the matter. And there have been people on both sides who are very radically in favour or very radically against the change, who are just the most bigoted assholes you will ever hear on the radio. Do you know? It's two personalities of Karen going at it.
Yeah.
But you also have people who very firmly believe one way or the other, who are lovely, generous, kind people who just believe that either the way it is now is not good enough, or that by changing too much, we're losing something important as a culture. And they're quite radical in the sense that, like, they're very extremist. Like, this is what they believe in, da, 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 da. But they're not evil either. And I don't know why it had me thinking. I think it's because I was thinking so much about that fucking vote today.
Yeah.
But like, he maybe has been radicalized, or maybe he saw it himself. He saw like little things here and there that just were not adding up to him, and he saw this opportunity to bring it back to the way it was. And he's like, the way it was before, the way it was in the beginning is better, was better, you know, back in my time, you know, back in the old days. And people who have that opinion, who have that belief, they're not wrong. Do you know? They're often not wrong. And they don't think that way because they're bigoted or racist or sexist or, you know, anti anything. They genuinely believe it was better the way it was before, or it's better the way it is now, or whatever the appropriate analogy is. And I think Hedon is like that, where I think he saw something in Time Lord society of the day that worried him. That he was concerned about, maybe they were losing contact with their history, maybe it was becoming too political, whatever the thing that he identified was, and it's unfortunate that we don't know what that is. And he looked to the past for answers. And he was like, oh my God, if only the person who gave us this great society was still here. And then I'm fully convinced that Omega twisted everything after that point. Do you know? Many tangents today. Oh my God. It's been a long week, people. It's been a long
Yeah,
week.
this is a very long week.
I don't think my referendum vote made any sense in context, but fuck it. Leave it in. They can listen to me ramble.
Oh, yeah, it was just such a weird fucking thing, a weird vote. We won't get into the details of it too much because real world politics can sometimes get a bit too hairy, but we shall continue on with the fake world politics of Doctor Who, and we will discuss Omega.
I agree with you in that Omega is, in many ways, a pitiful character. Particularly the way the Three Doctors ended, where he physically couldn't fucking leave.
Yeah.
I struggled to remember, with something to do, he'd been there for so fucking long.
Yeah.
He didn't have a physical form
Didn't have a physical
anymore.
form. No.
And that is horrendous. And you had three versions of the Doctor, and not one of them could come up with a solution. See, I feel for Omega as a character and as a person. However, you also made the point, and Doctor, you need to remember this. Omega is also batshit crazy because of his isolation. His plans to regain physical form in the main slash prime slash standard universe are all very dangerous, kind of creepy, and like, dude, just contact them and ask them for help. maybe put forward a case and like do some scientific research that comes up with a solution that does not involve you taking over someone else's body. And he totally picked the doctor because the doctor left him behind before. Like, I mean, obviously, also because the show is called Doctor Who, not the random guy in the background. But yeah, I think what makes Omega a non-redeemable bad guy is one of the things that makes you pity him, which is what makes him non-redeemable, is that the man has completely lost his marbles and he does not make rational choices. But the whole reason why he lost his mind in the first place and is incapable of making rational choices is because he was left alone for so long. Do you know, it's this thing of like he's irredeemable because of his circumstance, but that circumstance in itself makes you pity him. And you almost pity him more because he is irredeemable. Do you know, it's a weird thing. I was very scared about what he was going to do to the small Dutch child while they were watching the little puppet thing. Because he stared at that child way too long and then he did his creepy attempt at a smile, and I was like, oh my God, stranger danger. Like, run. Like, I don't know where they were going with that.
I think it was basically he's in the real world now, and this is the first time he's heard music in so long. And then he sees another person interact with him that isn't trying to kill him or suck up to him, or like, he's just interacting with another person for the first, like, in God knows how long.
I agree with you, that was the intention. What came across was stranger danger.
Absolutely. It was. I was half expecting the, look, there he is. And you just see him, Peter Davison running down the road with a fucking child tucked under his arm.
It's hard to describe anything that he does with any great seriousness because of his lack of sanity. So like he has his version of the doctor's body and he's free to steal people's clothes and run around Amsterdam. And he's like, I will grow a new TARDIS, I'll see you back in Gallifrey. I'm like, how the fuck do you intend to do that while running around Amsterdam? Like, but again, it's hard to discuss that without being like, well, the reason why he said it and the reason why he thinks he can do it is because he's batshit crazy. So yeah. How about you? What did you think of Batshit Crazy Man?
So I remember, like, kind of, I went back and I looked at my notes from the Three Doctors, and the what, like, because I wanted to remember why exactly they did what they did with the fucking matter, antimatter explosion that they presumed had killed Omega. And I was like, for lack of a better analogy, he's a rabid dog at this stage. You're doing him a f like you're doing him a favor by putting him down. Because while yes, you're kind of doing it for selfish reasons to save your own world, you're putting him out of his misery, you know? A couple of other things were he's dialed back on the insanity in terms of like the shouting loudly and the, grandiose movements. But I think they've lost like some of like the magnetic presence that he had. And that comes down to the clear difference in performance capabilities. And like, it's the only way that I can think of it is like that Stephen Thorne, the guy that originally did Omega, did the voice and the movement for him, had such more of a dramatic encapsulating flair about him that like you can't help but be sucked into Omega's presence. Here, I don't get it. It's not the same. And you could put that into some of the dialogue, some of the direction, whatever it is. And it's a shame because I remember back in the Three Doctors wondering would we ever see Omega and hoping he would come back because he was a great villain.
I will say I think the voice has a lot of to do with it in the presence. I don't think the new helmet helped either.
No, what the fuck was he? Is it a helmet or is it actually his head? Because it starts to deflate and melt, and it reminds me of like Rudy Giuliani's hair dye running when he was in an interview. Like it's weird.
Yeah,
I don't know what
I
it's meant
don't
to
know
be.
'cause the original Omega helmet or whatever it was, it drew the eye because it had eyes.
Yeah, it was a helmet. It was like a hoplite helmet almost. It was like there was a
Yeah,
face
whereas
there.
this is like a weird bug head, like a mechanical looking bug head. It and I don't know if that's because they wanted it to be a surprise that it was Omega, so they decided to change the look. But like it makes it hard to connect with him.
Yeah.
Even though, like, the old Omega helmet, the mouth didn't move or anything, but there was something about it that
Yeah.
was striking. It was sort of like a marble statue come to life or something. And this one doesn't have that.
No, it doesn't. So, interesting character discussion, I think. I like this was a good one. Well, they're
Many
all,
ramblings.
yeah, many ramblings. Lots to think about in terms of character dynamics. But so we've gone through the actual story, we've discussed the trivia, which never really seems to factor into our overall score, but it's just fun to go through. And then we have the character discussion. And so now we have the final part, which is our overall scoring, where Trish and I each give it a score of 5. So, Trish, you did the socials this week. You get to go first again. What is your score?
So, this story actually started out at like a 4. I really liked the start of it. I really liked the political drama on Gallifrey. I found the Earth story interesting. And then I got confused, not gonna lie. The whole thing with the Matrix just confused me and what was happening and why and what are we doing. I don't know, like I got very lost last night watching the end of it. The Amsterdam story was interesting, but like I don't think Paddy did all of it in his recap because you wouldn't have. There are several scenes where you have a scene on Gallifrey or a scene in the TARDIS, and you've got scene, cut to a random shot of Robin on Earth, back to scene. Like, what the fuck did you cut to him for? He didn't do anything. He literally cut for like 5 seconds of him just being there. And they did that a lot. There was also so much running around in Amsterdam. They really did not have enough in the script to justify the whole Amsterdam
No.
subplot. It was an interesting subplot when it started, but they did not have enough material for it. So it became a lot of running around for no fucking reason. Like that chase scene, like I know we joked before that the Planet of Spiders John Pertwee chase scene was literally just John Pertwee getting his James Bond moment. And it went on and on and on, but at least it was fucking interesting because they were changing fucking vehicle every 5 minutes. This was just three people running after a man. And I thought they were going to do something with the music because, you know, there was going to be something there and they didn't. And it's just like, okay. So the whole Matrix thing kind of lost me. The waste of time with just filler shots bothered me because there was so much character we could have gotten through, or maybe we would have gotten to know Thalia a bit more, or the other counselor a bit more, and seen their actual thoughts and opinions and things. I think the reveal, like I said, to me, it wasn't really a surprise. It was kind of obvious from the beginning, but that maybe at the time it wasn't, you know, and we have to accept that things we see now as very obvious and tropish weren't always, you know. And then, you know, Nyssa was great. Tegan was good. Not her best, but she was good. Some of our supporting cast was very good. Actually, a lot of the supporting cast was very good. And then you have the man the show was named after, who is once again on my drop kick down a flight of stairs list. So, all of that to say, it started at a 4 because I was actually really interested and I was really enjoying myself. And then it dropped down to a 3 just because it kind of, the pacing was off and the reveal wasn't great and a few other things that I think they could have done better. I think in concept it's great. I think its execution needed a bit more work, and like next time maybe you spend less time planning a trip to Amsterdam and more time focusing on the script. That'd be me. How about you?
You didn't give your score, or did you finish? Did you
I
finalize
did.
it
I
on
said
three?
3.
Okay, no, just the way that you were kind of going, I thought it was going to drop even further.
No, no,
Sorry.
3.
No, I agree. It starts out really good. We have a nice mystery in our hands. We have a good showcase for Nyssa. Lots of chicanery and skullduggery going on in Gallifrey, but then in the middle, it just falls apart. It really does. You didn't need the Aragon. You didn't. You could have. I know that it's meant to be like a ref, the thing of it's Omega's tool for doing stuff outside of the TARDIS because he can't leave. Lure Colin into the TARDIS, attack him yourself, and turn him into your slave, and then just have him do everything there. You don't need the Aragon. And you don't need the Aragon's gun to be a fucking thing. You can have the Doctor help free Colin, and then they confront Omega inside the TARDIS. You don't need as many bloody shots of canals and waterways and all that bollocks. You don't need, as I said, a lot of repetitive scenes of the custodian guard walking up and down hallways. You can trim 15 minutes of footage on this thing, and as I said, you can end episode 3 with the reveal of Omega as a duplicate of the Doctor, and then the fourth episode is trying to hinder to be stopped and have give Tegan a chance to actually have her therapy session, as it were. And bringing back Omega, in theory, I liked it. Unfortunately, it just didn't hit the same way that the original Omega did. And our for our supporting cast, I thought Colin did a great job. I always like Michael Gough when he's around. And so yeah, I think I split this one down the middle and I just settled on a 2.5.
Fair enough. Fair enough. It's still a massive improvement on last week.
Yeah, Jesus.
You know, like, I think f as a follow-on from Time Flight, with the exception of the Doctor himself, I was much more engaged this week. Even when it did go off the rails, I was still curious. You know, I mentioned last time I didn't want to finish fucking Time Flight. I got sick of watching it.
Hmm.
I didn't get sick of watching it. It lost me at several points, but I wanted it to get me back again. Do you know what I mean? Like, I wanted it to sort of bring me back in. I don't think it did it that effectively. But a nice opener. Good ideas. Big questions for next week.
Mm-hmm.
And next week we'll see if it actually follows through.
Yes. And next week can also go fuck itself because the title alone I hate.
Do you want me to say it?
Yes. And don't do the sound.
Next week's episode is called Snake Dance. I'm doing the sound in my head.
Yes. Until then, guys. Bye.
Bye. Ha 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 ha!